Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Aiken City Council work session of April 21st, 2005. And once again, we're here to discuss the downtown design guidelines. And we appreciate everybody being here. We had an extensive review of this, what, a week ago, about, and we decided we needed a little bit more time, and we'll come back and talk some more. And Randy Wilson is here with us. Randy has done yeoman's job on this, putting it together with the help of some others from ADDA, working with ADDA. And I've asked him, if he would, to give another short presentation so that those who have not seen it or heard about it before can see what he's put together for us. And then we'll have plenty of time for questions. The only thing we need to do, we need to be out of here by 6:45, which gives us plenty of time, I think. And if we have any legal questions from anyone, by the way, Gary needs to leave at 6:45, 6:20, right?
Correct.
So be thinking if you have any legal-type questions, we'll ask him before he leaves. Mr. Leduc, would you like to say anything, sir?
No.
Okay, thank you.
Nothing major, other than the fact that, as I mentioned at the meeting on Tuesday night, the schedule for this document is if council looks at it tonight and it feels that they have enough information to at least make a preliminary presentation Monday night, we'd have a first reading. It needs to go before the Planning Commission in May for their review. They, in turn, would go ahead and give formal reading on it in June, and then it would come back to City Council for second reading the latter part of June. So again, we could be making changes as we go along, but it's again how quickly does council want to get to it and to what form do you want to have it for Monday night. Those are a couple of things that Gary, I think, is going to have to touch on before he leaves as far as what type of boards could you have, one versus two, how would it be incorporated in the zoning manual. And I'd like to have him comment before he leaves, but we could certainly hear what Randy has and then take it from there.
Okay, thank you, sir. Randy Wilson.
Well, the mayor's going to test my memory. I wasn't planning on presenting this, so we'll see how well I do and how well I remember my points from last time. We set out on this excursion to develop guidelines for the historic downtown part of Aiken in the commercial district about 6 to 8 months ago. And this is what we're going to talk about briefly, the purpose of the guidelines, the process that we went through to get to where we are today, and some of the highlights or particulars of the product, the guidelines themselves. When we really set out to do this, the first thing we said we want to do was make sure that the investment that you in the private realm or the council in the public realm had made to Aiken in terms of fixing up your buildings, in terms of wonderful streetscaping and parks, that was safeguarded. That's the whole goal here, is every time someone does something inappropriate to a building, it just diminishes the overall quality slightly, and every time somebody does something beneficial to a building, it improves the overall quality and appreciates the value. But we want to make sure we were true to Aiken. We didn't want to turn you into another place. You will see when we get to the guidelines, the overwhelming majority of the photographs are from Aiken. We try to put your best foot forward and say, you know, this is what we want to appeal to. The only standard to which we want to hold people is the standard that is true to Aiken. And one of the ways that we want to do that is promoting myriad can-do solutions. You know, when you flip on the page that says building setback or awnings and canopies, we want you to see 8 or 10 photographs that show you how you can accomplish this. And again, most of those photographs are from right here in Aiken. We don't want to be construed as the design police and telling people what they can't do with their properties, but rather saying this is how you can satisfy this. Because the whole goal, by the way, is for us to identify what makes Aiken special, what makes Aiken unique, and what makes Aiken Aiken. That's what this whole process has done. And now we're saying, let's meet up to that standard. And then finally, we wanted to make sure it was an easy-to-use document and an easy-to-administer process. The last thing we want to do is impose any impediment to business. So the process that we embarked on was a highly participatory one. We had lots of involvement from the public, both with the subcommittee comprised significantly of ADDA, but also other citizens and representatives. We held a couple of public workshops, and again, the whole ambition here was to educate the public on what makes Aiken special. When we talk about the Aiken architectural character, well, that sounds like big fancy architectural words. What does that really mean? And by way of example, you can see the string of buildings along the bottom of this slide. We photographed every building in downtown Aiken. And then in these workshops, we picked it apart. We said, okay, what's the overall height of these buildings? What's the dominant material? What's the dominant style of the windows? And it's amazing when you just take, when you just step back and look and ask simple questions, the answers sort of become very obvious as to what would be an appropriate response, either to renovate a building in this area or to build a new building in this area. The document itself, again, the goal is to make it as easy to use as possible so that both the document and the staff that are here to administer it are viewed as advocates in the process. There are basically six chapters, and the key ones are the ones in the middle on site design, new buildings, and existing buildings. But obviously we had to have an introduction that covered some basics, the area of the review of the overlay district, some miscellaneous guidelines that pertain to things like paint, signs, and artwork. And then in the back, which we'll talk about in greater detail, are some checklists to help both the applicant and the review commission through the process. Again, the three major components are the site design chapter, the new construction chapter, and the existing buildings or renovations chapter. I just felt like, just let's don't make this overly burdensome. Let's just make it very obvious. Each page has a number of things in common. They all have the six things that are listed, or maybe it's that's that one, two, three, four, five, six on the left. The first thing is up in the upper left or upper right-hand corner in the dark green square just simply calls out where you are in the book and what the design issue is that's being addressed. In this case, building setback and alignment. The band of green across the top tells you where you are in the chapters of the design guidelines themselves, because sometimes you can get lost in these things. You're looking at windows, but your response to windows in new construction will be different than your response to windows in existing or renovation construction. So you have to be able to know where you are at all times. And then I tried to write an elaborate paragraph about that topic in common language, you know, trying as hard as possible not to use big fancy architectural words. But just to be on the safe side, then there are just a couple of bulleted points underneath that are sort of the guideline goals that get at the heart of what we're trying to accomplish in that particular design issue. And then the most important part, to be frank and honest with you, words are great and you have to have them, but pictures and illustrations are worth a thousand words. And so we have illustrations that draw what we're after. They both point to appropriate as well as inappropriate responses so people understand it very clearly. And then we have lots of photographs that illustrate both positively and negatively what we're getting after. I have gone back and made one change. Any photographs that were illustrating a negative point, we have chosen to make those from places other than Aiken so that we didn't inadvertently frustrate or upset anyone, which was clearly not our desire. Perhaps the single biggest distinctive of your design guidelines that I've never seen in any others are two checklists in the back of the document. The first checklist, 6.1, is for the applicant themselves. And I've taken every page, or perhaps better said, every design issue that's inside the entire body of the design guidelines, and I just elicited a few guideline goal statements that pertain to each one. And so an applicant can very quickly turn to this checklist, you know, look at their designs and say, you know, have I satisfied this? And again, these are very common sense sort of, you know, goal statements by way of example in 2.4F pertaining to site design. You know, have we preserved the historic features of the streetscape such as Aiken's Parkway medians? Just, again, quick and easy statements that they can respond to and see if they've satisfied it in their solution. You can see it doesn't say how to do it. It just says these are the goals for doing it. And then the second checklist in Chapter 6.2 is for whatever review commission is developed to administer these guidelines. It's just been my experience that most people get the design part right, but where they can tend to err is on the procedural part. And most applicants, all they're really after is an assurance that they're being treated fairly and they're being treated the same way that the previous applicant and the applicant last month and the applicant last year was treated. And by using a checklist, the review body can ensure themselves that they're going through the same criteria with every project, and they're assuring themselves that they aren't going to get what I call being blinded by style. You know, a building comes along that they like, and, you know, some feature, let's say the color, you know, their favorite color is yellow, the building is painted yellow, so they have this warm, fuzzy, positive feeling about the building, and then they forget, well, the site design is awful. But they got blinded by style. They just focused on one element. And the flip side is also true. Perhaps this person's least favorite building material is brick, and so they want to have a negative response to this application. Well, the checklist assures a greater degree of objectivity as opposed to subjectivity in the review process. And again, you can just... Oh, and the other thing that I did... is not only is each section of the checklist that corresponds to the companion chapter in the design guidelines listed, but then I asked a number of elaborative questions so that the commissioner, or whether that person is an architect or a banker or a lawyer or whatever, but someone who might not necessarily have training in design, can ask a series of questions to understand what are we trying to get after in this particular element. I'll just give you one example relative to, we'll do streetscaping and landscape. You know, the commissioners need to be asking in their head as they're looking at a review, an applicant, is the distinctive parkway median treatments in Aiken maintained or compromised by this design? Are any proposed parking lots buffered with low walls and or landscaping? Are any trees being removed as a part of this application? If so, are replacement trees being proposed? And what is their size, species, and spacing? Again, it just gives each commissioner a series of questions to ask to be able to verify that the applicant has succeeded on those points. And then finally, this is frankly the stage that we're in right now. It's the implementation phase, trying to make these wonderful pictures and images and goal statements into a reality. We've met with council a week ago. We're here tonight to talk about it in more detail. Gary has already done some great work to begin linking this document to existing ordinances. I know one of the issues that the council will be wrestling with is what board should review these. Should it be a collaboration of existing one or a new one? I'm going to propose, and perhaps you've already thought about it, that there needs to be one very good staff liaison, the kind of person who has a good design sense, kind of person who works well with people, potential conflict, the kind of person who will be viewed as an advocate for development and renovation and new construction in downtown. Now, I have a fairly strong opinion, and I forgot to mention her last week, so I'm going to do it this time. I think Susan French would make an awesome staff liaison. And she would give me $20. I'd say she also needs a huge raise to do this. But seriously, we have a person named Krista Hampton in the city of Columbia who was that staff liaison between applicants and the review commission of which I sat on. And Krista single-handedly has changed the whole, shall we say, spirit of design review in Columbia. And with the creation recently of the new Columbia Design Center, I mean, this whole process is very much viewed as an advocate, proactive way to help people through the design review process. And frankly, it affords them a lot of free design services. Basically, when they come in, it's like, what can we help you do to get your project through the process? And it's become a very, very much so a win-win-win situation. And then follow-up, training and evaluation. When the new board is created, I would encourage council and the board to get training, whether it's through me or someone else, both on the design, but especially on the procedural aspects of design review. And then particularly since you're enacting a new set of guidelines, evaluation on an annual basis, at least for the first couple of years, you just need to stop every now and then and take stock and say what things are working and what things aren't. And that's the whole reason why we're considering having the design guidelines as an amendment to the ordinance and not embedded in the ordinance, so that you have the flexibility to change them over time. So I hope that gives you a sense of where we are and where we've come from.
Randy, would you take one more minute to explain to everyone how you're set up in Columbia? You are on one of the, what, five district committees, review committee. Not that we'd need five.
Right.
But I think it's of interest to know how Columbia is set up.
In Columbia, about 7 or 8 years ago, not unlike Aiken, we only had one review board, and it was called the Landmarks Commission, and it only and solely reviewed historic properties. When we conducted the city center of the downtown Columbia master plan, it was recommended that a single review board be established that would review both historic properties and new construction in the downtown area. And that is now called the DDRC, which stands for the Design Development Review Commission. I sat on that board for 8 years. And we have... It's pretty cumbersome, actually. I know of seven distinct review districts, and I want to say we have at least three different sets of design guidelines or criteria that we have to evaluate those properties against. Because I think everyone understands, but just to be implicit, we don't review a downtown commercial building to the same criteria and degree as we would a historic property. And by the way, and by the other end of the spectrum, there are certain review districts that really aren't terribly attractive. let's be plain. And in those cases, the design guidelines, we allow a lot more latitude, because the goal there, unlike your goal, remember, your goal for your design guidelines was to maintain and safeguard what you have. The goal there was to bring up the standard of design. And so we're just kind of helping it along. So it's five or six or seven districts, three sets of guidelines.
Mm-hmm. And we're talking about the downtown here. And once we get established exactly procedures and everything we can follow for downtown, then we can start looking at other areas if we want to get into other areas away from the downtown district. But that would be for another day, obviously. Gary, would you like to review what you have done?
Yes, sir. I'd be happy to.
Please.
I have, with assistance from the staff, gone ahead and prepared an initial draft of the ordinance that will come before council on Monday night. And the ordinance does several things, and of course the ordinance can be modified to do whatever council's pleasure is with respect to this, but what I'm going to give you is what makes sense to me, at least from doing this. You will do several things. The first thing that you do in this ordinance is going to come before you on Monday is you are going to establish the Downtown Design Overlay District. And that is the district that is set out in the design guidelines on page 6 of the guidelines. And so if council needs to modify that district in any way or wants to change that in any way, we would need to know that. But that's the district that the design guidelines would apply to. You also, at that time, adopt these guidelines as the guidelines that you want the whichever commission council decides to use. These are the guidelines they will use for purposes of evaluating various requests for certificates of appropriateness that will come before either the planning staff or, as the ordinance reads now, the Historic Preservation Commission. So you will adopt these guidelines and as part of the ordinance. The next thing that you will do is you will amend the zoning ordinance, and specifically you will be in Chapter 5 of the zoning ordinance that talks about historic preservation. Presently, there is only one article in Chapter 5, and that is the part that talks about historic preservation in the city of Aiken. And we will be adding Article 2 to that chapter that will talk about design overlay districts. and so council's comfortable with the materials, what I have done is basically pulled the language out of the zoning ordinance that deals with historic preservation, and with Bill and Ed's help, I have pulled out language that specifically deals only with historic preservation, the word landmark, for example, and pulled that kind of language out of that section, and then incorporated whatever language was necessary to make it clear that we were talking about design overlay districts. The way the ordinance, part of the ordinance, you will also, when you establish the downtown design district, it's in the about the very first paragraph of the amendment to the zoning ordinance, and it's set up as subparagraph A, the design, the downtown design overlay district. And if council were to adopt a second overlay district or a third overlay district or however you wanted to do that, all we would have to do is amend that one paragraph, and everything else would be in place other than whatever design guidelines you may wish to implement for that particular new district. Okay, so it makes it very easy to amend this in the future if council decides they like the downtown district and decide they want to apply it to another district in town. You amend the zoning ordinance and the city code, and again, this decision would be based, in order to make this happen, council would have to decide that they want the Historic Preservation Commission to act as the board that reviews all of the downtown design requests. You will be amending the city code and the zoning ordinance to reflect that the Historic Preservation Commission will now be known as the Design Review Board. And everywhere that we refer to the Historic Preservation Commission in all of our ordinances will be changed so that that will now be known as the Design Review Board. And other than that, I don't know that you have to do anything in order to have the Historic Preservation Commission start doing the work of the downtown overlay district. You also will amend the zoning ordinance to make it clear that the now Design Review Board has the authority to hold public hearings, investigate, review, place conditions on, and make decisions on application plans, certificates of appropriateness, or other permits for alteration, construction, demolition, or relocation of structures within overlay districts or which may affect overlay districts. So, and that is, that's what the ordinance is. It's obviously, the ordinance is going to encompass a lot, but that's what the ordinance that will be presented to you on Monday night will do.
Okay, and that assumes that we use the historic current.
But council has to make that decision.
Right, which, you know, I'm not sure. None of us know, I guess, exactly right now how much work this is going to be. But I think it's going to be a big job. And I wonder if they can handle that. Has anyone discussed this with them? Ed? Okay. And that's fine because we don't know where we're going. So,
Mayor, I'm more concerned about, is this significantly different than what they do, that when you have guidelines and they have specifics, and I think we need to be real careful on because I've got some questions on this about, you know, they're very specific about not changing any material or whatever. And this is different. This is a different deal altogether. These are guidelines set for this particular area, so I think we need to be real careful on that. I think it's a decision that right now I'd lean to have our own commission, but I don't know whether we can find enough getting people out of this area that's affected by it to sit on it or whatever. That would be what I'd rather do, but I don't have I haven't made my decision either way. It would be good to be able to use the other one. I'm concerned about the fact that they have a different set of guidelines than what this is, and then in their mind they would be trying to make it, not to make it simple, but it would influence the way they would think.
I'd like to suggest this for what it's worth, and you know, we've talked in the past about how council will pass an ordinance on first reading, and there is going to have to be more information that comes before you, I think, before council can finalize this ordinance. And one of the things that has to happen before you can amend the zoning ordinance, Planning Commission has to review it. And so you can't pass a final ordinance without that review taking place. So there is going to be a period of time after Monday's first reading for council to give that more serious consideration, possibly make recommendations to the Planning Commission before their next meeting. And I mean, you haven't even seen the document I'm going to give to you on Monday night yet, so I know you don't know what I'm talking about in detail, but it is, if you look at the zoning ordinance section that deals with historic preservation, you are going to see a very similar document when you look at the design overlay districts.
But should we choose to do another commission, that wouldn't be that complicated?
Oh, no. It would be very simple to do.
Yeah, we can still use most of the same language.
With a computer, it's very simple to do. With a typewriter, it would be very difficult to do.
My feeling is, are we going to talk about this now, or you want to wait and talk about it later?
No, I think we can talk about it right now.
I would like...
May I say this?
Yes.
Because I do need to sneak out.
Okay, you get your stuff in first.
From a legal perspective, I think Randy can tell you that there are municipalities in the state that do either way.
Oh.
They have a historic... or they have one board that does it. In some cities, I think Spartanburg is one that has two different boards that do it.
If we expand this to other neighborhoods...
Mm-hmm.
Could this new commission handle that? In other words, their guidelines, they would be interpreting guidelines. You understand what my question is?
My understanding from Randy is that the city of, correct me if I'm wrong, the city of Columbia does the historic preservation and does the five design districts. It's the same commission.
And residential. And again, there are pros and cons to both approach. I'm not going to mislead you.
What are the requirements for membership on that commission? Do you have to have so many of people from downtown business owners, or what?
Yes, we do. And I can get that language to Gary. And I apologize. I don't know off the top of my head. I think we require a 8-person commission. I know it requires one architect, one person with a historic background, either architecture or just art history. It requires an attorney, requires some person in either the banking or real estate industry located in the affected area to ensure business interests are taken into account. And then I think it's then a couple of members at large.
And some of those requirements are state law requirements, mm-hmm. and some of those would be city council requirements.
And that would be my reason for thinking maybe another group would be a good thing, particularly because I may be wrong, but I think the current Preservation Commission really doesn't have a downtown property owner on it, and I think that this committee should, and I think a downtown business owner would be appropriate, and I think I think there are a lot of different interests that exist in this downtown area that, for at least right now, like you said, if we add other districts and we add other things later on, that's another thing.
Yeah, and I think in your case, you know, besides like Gary referred to, there's both the state language that you're going to have to adhere to. But I think in your case, you have such a track record of some specific downtown initiatives. I'm thinking right now of ADDA and the design committee of that group. You know, think about the investment of knowledge that those people have. So maybe in your case, you want to have one person on this review commission that's on the design committee of ADDA, so that there's a nice link and a nice liaison for people who either come through that channel or through the city channel.
There's also mention, I believe the mayor had stated, that there's going to be a lot of work or applications. I'm not too sure which you were trying to state, but the whole premise that we hope to have with the document is that by us using some outside help, we'll be able to resolve the majority of the issues by working with the owner of the property or the developer of the property, so that few cases are going to have to go beyond the planning director to this board or commission. Mm-hmm. That, first of all, the area is much smaller. If you look on page 6, it's not that large of an area. And then number 2, the number of cases have come up in the last few years is only, wouldn't be like currently where we'll have 6, 7, 8
items that go to the commission, and then there's another 6, 7, or 8 that Ed and the commission chairman is already approving outside of there. So we have a dozen or more applications every month from the historic district. I'd be surprised we get more than a few, 2 or 3 every month from this one area. And hopefully of those 2 or 3, we are going to resolve most, if not all, of those every month internally. So the need for this board commission is not going to be as great as you would have the historic district.
That's an extremely good point, Roger, and I apologize. I meant to make it in my presentation. In Columbia, if it's a new building, it's automatically going to get reviewed. But again, with all of the help that we afford everyone. But then when it comes to renovation construction, you know, 8, 9 times out of 10, assuming it's not something just obviously wrong, it can be approved on the staff level. There's no reason someone who's designing, you know, an enclosure for their outdoor dining area, that can't be approved, particularly if you've got someone like a Susan who has a design sense and background. Again, what I tell people oftentimes is the guidelines are for the exceptions, not for the norm.
And we do have money in the budget next year to hire some help so that, again, we're going to be assisting and not be regulatory in all this. But I think that is one of the key areas that council will have to decide is, do you continue with the same commission and change the title? Do you form a different commission, knowing that we hope to sometime in the future, Beverly's already mentioned it, that on the north side possibly having a district. We talked about Tuesday night having a design standards for other major highway areas. That'd be another district. So we may have 3 or 4 other districts in the future that are going to have to fall under one of these commissions or under the central commission that we'd have. The other thing that's going to have to be done by someone, whether it's the planning commission or council, is which things you would want to have staff approved automatically versus things that would go to this commission. As Randy said, it might be that all demolitions you'd want to have automatically go to the commission if they're of some standard or appropriateness. If it was just an old gas station, probably wouldn't need to go to the commission. If it's a building next to DeVore's, you'd probably want to go to the commission. If it's a staircase somewhere, you probably wouldn't need to go, and Ed could look at it. But again, it's depending on what level it is, a demolition may go automatically. If it's a brand new building, again, it's probably automatically going to go to the commission. But renovations, hopefully that can be done on a staff level, and that's what you mainly get in the downtown area is a lot of renovations. Windows, shutters, awnings, doors, painting, facade type work. And that'll mirror in with that $10,000 facade grant easement that we will be also approving. Again, tonight what we're looking to do is to, number one, is there any questions on the set of guidelines that Randy has put together? You may have some questions on that that we need to deal with before Monday. And then if you had any sense of the format that you'd like to see as far as boards and commission, that would be helpful as far as Gary is concerned in trying to draft this up to Monday night. The sense we got from you last week was that you wanted something on the agenda for Monday night to at least get this moving forward. You know, this is not the end result, this is the beginning, and that there's at least another 6 weeks prior to seeing it for second reading. At least that gets the ball, the process moving forward so the Planning Commission could start looking at this and making their review.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing that might tend to make me think we need a separate committee is you've got people in the district that care about the district. They presumably, that some of them may be owners or not, but they really take pride in that, and they, as opposed to having folks all around the district maybe trying to make decisions about it, I wonder if that wouldn't be something that would be good to have people that have some ownership.
If you look at the genesis of how we did this, we started with that. We started with the people that are affected by it, and
right.
I would say, I was just looking through the blocks. And sometimes it's not easy to get people to serve on commissions. So, I mean, to say that they all have to be from it, maybe we have to say the majority, but I was just looking through and look how many people can. Sometimes you have trouble getting people to serve on commissions, so I think it would be good for the majority to be in it, but not to limit it just to it.
Right, and, yeah, some specified number of those.
Especially if you start saying it's got to be an architect, it's got to be a builder, an attorney,
banker.
There may not be someone in this area that's going to be.
Yeah, it can't be both. They're looking for their professional expertise in most cases, rather than just their.
Yeah. Is it the sense that, that maybe that's the way we ought to go, at least on first reading?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think a second.
We've got plenty of time.
Yes, you do, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, so we'd keep a Historic Preservation Commission, mm-hmm. and we'd form up some kind of architectural review board or design review board mm-hmm. as a separate body.
Yes,
that's what I'm...
Okay, we'll have that on first reading.
Okay.
Could all of you turn to page 6 of the design guidelines?
By the way, if anyone in the audience has a comment or a thought on this, you're certainly welcome to give us your thoughts as we go through here. Just let us know.
Page 6.
And in case they don't have a document, I'm going to be putting
board.
Up on screen.
Okay. There's several areas here that are, if not all, predominantly residential areas within some of these blocks. Now, this was meant to be downtown. The guidelines or the lines that are set here is the downtown area as we have defined through ADDA and some other format. But again, this does not have to be the exact guidelines if you don't want these lines. You can draw up any lines you want to.
Right.
You know, that's up to City Council as to where you want the lines. But again, if you look at Fairfield from Barnwell down to Richland, it's predominantly residential. And so what you're saying is those individuals within that residential area would have to follow these guidelines for any renovations that they would be doing on any of their homes.
If I could just offer one piece of advice, learned the hard way in Columbia. More times than not, what you'll see like this is a boundary drawn down the middle of a street. And just make sure wherever that boundary lies, it adheres to the buildings facing that line as well. In downtown Columbia, they drew the city center like this, right down the middle of the street. And on this side of the street, you're in a review district. On that side, you're not.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of this stuff that looks good has to face, you know, your storage facilities and your quick see gas stops. And so word to the wise, wherever the boundary is, it has both faces on it.
Good point.
Well, so you had to go to the middle of a block to do it.
I agree with that.
if you go to the end of the block, you're always going to have the
problem. Not really. Remember, we're only reviewing the portions of the building that are readily visible from the street. So really, you're only dealing with the facade.
Okay.
Is there a way to make that reflected in the ordinance that you want, where the boundaries are that you want? All the structures that face on that street.
Well, you could certainly put a note on the map. You know,
the map would be the document that we show.
Yeah.
You have to draw the lines in the map to show that.
Mm-hmm. I'll see if I can add some text here, and probably Gary can do the same in the legal description of the overlay district.
Sam wanted to say something.
Sam,
on that same page. On the bottom left, and I don't think that unless you could raise that up.
Sure. Just one second.
At the end it says, to the south side of Clark Avenue, I just want to put a railroad cut, and then that part of that map goes around to the little cut.
South side of Park Avenue.
Do we need to be more specific than that?
If I could make a recommendation, I think whatever boundaries you come up with, you need to have Gary craft what I call the written description. And then if he'll give me a copy, I'll just make sure it matches here.
On some sides of this, we have it abuts an historic district that exists, mm-hmm. does it not? I think...
I couldn't tell you.
It may.
Mark, it
should,
in
yes.
In that case, we'd be fairly safe, because then
you're
that
covered,
would pertain.
Covered
it wouldn't just be... But on some sides, it doesn't. And that's where we'd really need to watch it, I think.
And again, you may want to leave this to the Planning Commission to look at the boundaries as to where you'd want these things drawn. Because again, primarily the reflection of what we were trying to do here was for the downtown commercial areas, not residential. All I'm pointing out is that there are several residential areas in this boundary.
Well, really, Roger, what you're talking about is the commercial downtown area that fronts on Richland Avenue may be useful. Everything to the north of that line would be residential in nature.
Right. And in which case, you wouldn't have to
would
do what I suggested.
Line, you just draw the line on the frontage of Richland Avenue.
Which, basically, then we would be changing the line, and the line may go all the way up to Barnwell, where First Baptist is at, United Methodist Church is at, maybe even all the way to Lawrence and to, let's see, over to Pendleton. But then again, you're gonna, this line may have to change. We got it right now where they're nice straight lines. Yeah. And again, that may not be what you want.
It may need to come down York and then go over on there's some commercial stuff on Richland there, yeah.
And so you just need to let us know, are you looking for commercial only or properties that could be commercial? Or how do you want this?
What is that zoned over there, I wonder? I can't remember.
The reason for these boundary lines primarily is because that's the central business district from out of downtown business district. Yeah. That's essentially where those boundaries are.
It's the CBD then?
Yeah.
Yeah. We were just matching it. But that doesn't necessarily mean you want that all to be within the guidelines. Very quickly, Randy, on a residential unit. If I have a residential unit, and it's a single-family home, and I wanted to put up replacement windows, vinyl-clad replacement windows, I would have to go through staff or someone to do that.
And my first question to you is this house not in a residential historic district?
And it's not, okay. The ones that we're pointing out here.
My personal view is I would prefer that it did go through a review process because its appearance will affect the area. But generally, I always try to draw a distinction between architectural style and use, you know, because there are commercial uses that occur inside residential structures. We would clearly say that needed to go through review, and so I would say, by extension, then you should review it, albeit with a standard of care that's not to the par of a historic district.
So even though we're dealing mainly with commercial structures, and that's a residential structure, again, just so that
that's a big difference.
But Roger, the problem with that is
really commercial.
The problem with that is though, if you take the properties that are on the block area from York Street over to Union north of Richland Avenue, except for what fronts on Richland, most of that, except for the corner of Barnwell, most of that is residential in nature, and I would say that those residences have more in common with the areas that are north of it, not covered by the area. In other words,
if you've got blocks like that, no, I don't think it should be in this district.
Yeah, that's
what I thought you were asking was if you've got this contiguous area commercial
that's surrounded by
one or two.
Yeah, no.
I'm just
talking about
we got a block here that's all residential.
No, I don't think there's
all those houses that they want to
the stuff on Richland. The stuff on Richland probably should be, Roger, but the stuff north of it, they're all residential. We probably need to redraw the line.
And as we stated, at some point in time, we want to take that north side and probably put it in some kind of a area,
but it would have
that
a different
may have
set
guidelines that are totally different from these guidelines and totally different from the historic district. And so you have a third set of guidelines that would fit. That would be more natural for those homes and the areas that they're in. And that's why Columbia has, I think you said, seven different districts, each one having its own manual. And I could see that happening here very easily, that within our zoning document, we would have one for the downtown and one for this district and one for this district and one for this district. And depending where you're at, you'd turn that manual and have its own set of separate guidelines that would depict what can or cannot be done in that area.
Mm-hmm. Another thought. Rather than have something that looks like this and goes all over the place, why can't we just simply say, in this district, it just refers to commercial
business we're building.
Mr. Mayor, part of the problem, though, is this. The reason, one of the rational reasons, good reasons for having the boundary similar to the current commercial zone is that, yes, you could have residential uses in there at the current, at the present time, but the zoning of the area is commercial. Therefore, someone could come in, take out a residence at any moment, or replace it with a commercial use at any moment, and suddenly you've got a commercial use. I don't know how it would be very difficult administratively to make those kind of jumps back and forth without going ahead and including everything within the commercially zoned area.
That's what I'm saying.
In the design guidelines, whether it's a residential use or not.
There, but these just apply right now, at least what we've been talking about, is it only applies to commercial.
But I'll give you an example. What about the Brinkley property that's almost next door to us? If they wanted to tear down that structure to radically modify it, if they're not in this guideline or within this district and they're covered because it is a residential property, they'd be able to do so.
Well, I'm saying keep them in the district.
But you're saying don't have them follow the guidelines.
Well, I'll...
If you want to gerrymander it up, forget it. If right now there's a wonderful simplicity to having the simple business district and the historic overlay district and the fire district be one and the same. Mm-hmm. You know how to handle it.
Yeah.
Houses within that district should conform when it's time for them to conform.
What has to be changed then, Randy, if anything, with this document to include residential properties?
It does.
Well, our goal here talks about commercial.
I think
first sentence talks about commercial.
I think you would have to add some residential photographs. I mean, because I agree with this gentleman.
Oh, I don't disagree at all. But
because it's unquestionable. That almost every photograph and what I was geared to was what is traditionally referred to as commercial architecture. And you do have some exceptions. I mean, I don't see that slide at the bottom anymore, but there's a residence halfway down the block, not on that one, in the other one.
Right.
And again, it gets at the very heart of what we tried to do here. Part of what makes Aiken Aiken is the fact that you have residences in the downtown area, albeit typically in a commercial use. So I think the solution, without going through a lot of heartburn, is to add a series of photographs that would address doors, windows, wall materials of a residence.
Well, the first line has to be changed.
Yeah, and the
protect
thing...
Protect the unique architectural characteristics of Aiken's downtown commercial building. So that's got to be changed, obviously.
Well, I think what the best solution would be... The best solution is to do what Roger referred to, is you have another set of guidelines that refer to more quintessentially residential properties, be they in the commercial district, be they in the preservation district, be they in some sort of buffer district. That would be the best approach.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But, I don't know what you're going to do in the meantime.
Well, if the goal of this was to create a downtown business district and try to save our downtown as far as building, and that block right here, if every one of those are residential, I'm talking about the top right corner, which is where the residential is, it seems to me the simplest thing to do is adjust the line, and if 100% of those are residential houses, then we draw the line, say we're trying to protect our business district, but then when we redraw our other area for residential, it's in its own neighborhood, which we all know that the area north of from York over to Union, north of Richland Avenue, is residential. Yeah. So what I'm saying is just redraw a line and then create another neighborhood, but then we have to go through the whole process again with that neighborhood.
Well, Pat, that's fine. That is fine. All I'm saying is you're going to have some jagged lines. So on Pendleton, you've got houses in there, you've got some business.
No, I guess what I'm saying, Mr. Mayor, if you have the predominant use is commercial that can be converted, it has to stay. What I'm telling you is those two block areas, the predominant use is residential. That if the predominant use, of the rest of this, you may have mixed residential in there, but we just have to treat them the same. And if they're in the, if in their boundary, they're in the boundary. I don't see how we can say this is it and this is the other.
But Pat, are those Are they the RF?
I think they're RS on that. We went through this before, and I believe most of those are RS. They were RS.
Most of
them were resident.
Is both sides of the street that are residential, or are there still buildings that would be facing the downtown district?
Let's ask Ed. Can you answer that?
If you go down York Street from where the vacant lot is in the African American Museum, most of its residents in that first block, you take a right on Bonneville, and it's on Fairfield. Most of that, except for what fronts on Richland Avenue, I would say most of that is residential, because that's where we've been trying to renovate the residential houses.
Are you talking south of Bonneville?
Yes.
Like everything south of Bonneville Avenue, as Bill said, within this boundary here, is downtown business. It's zoned to go out commercial.
Even though it's currently
residential.
So we need some guidelines then, mainly even to protect that neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Because, like Bill said, if someone would get a bright idea that they'd like to plunk a business in the middle of all these houses.
Right.
We either need to change that zoning in that block.
If it's business, we ought to leave it in there. I mean, if it's zoned business, then we need to leave it in there.
That's where I feel, too.
Yeah, I agree.
Given this conversation, I'd like to retract something I said earlier. I think they've got to be two different things. To try to ask one set of guidelines to address many different kinds of architecture, I think you're going to dilute them. And so I think you ought to have a standalone document for that. And by the way, it doesn't have to be near as exhaustive as this. I can show you, remember last time I told you about this Lower Shandon Waverly District? You know, that document's probably only 5 to 7 pages of text, a few photographs, and you accomplish it because the scope is, mm-hmm. is so much smaller.
Mm-hmm. It seems to me that the problem gives us an opportunity because, Randy, you also suggested the idea of residential design. Maybe we should be looking at the entire district, north side, that we're talking about eventually doing. Let's just do it all at once. We still have the commercial area this way, but we say, as you suggested, that the residential guideline applies so long as they continue to be used as residential. But if they're going to convert it to a business use, then the other applies.
Could we leave? I just had another thought. Protect the unique architectural characteristics of Aiken's downtown commercial buildings. What if someone wants to build an apartment complex? That's residential.
Mm-hmm. But if it's in the area, they still have to comply, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if it's in that same area here, then that's what Randy, I think, was talking about. We need that 6 or 7 pages of whatever to
yes.
to handle that. And you've got that. You can give us a copy of that, couldn't you?
Sure.
Please.
But there's nothing in here that would... In other words, we want to make sure that whatever we have really does cover the area that we've indicated on our map.
Yeah, do you remember one of the very first things I told you all about a year ago? I said, trust me, you cannot codify everything that you're going to face. I was prophetic, wasn't I? That's why you've got to make this as loose as possible mm-hmm. and as interpretive as possible and as amendable as possible. Because we can't anticipate all the things that we're going to face. But I did want to respond to your specific building type, Jane. If it's just totally apartments, that's gray area. But I can tell you one of the dominant uses we're advocating in the downtown areas, particularly in Columbia and nationwide, is mixed use with a lot of upper floor housing, where you put retail, a lot of street activity on the first floor, and then a couple of 1, 2, or more floors of housing. They're extraordinarily successful. Now, you bet your bottom dollar in Columbia, we want to make sure that building, even though it's inside a commercial district, even though it has a higher than average percentage of residential componentry, it's going to look like it fits into the downtown area, and it would be governed by this set of guidelines.
Mm-hmm. Could we just leave that word commercial out?
I'm doing your bidding. You tell me what you want.
Or add residential.
Yeah, that's right.
Sissy.
Randy, have you had experience in Columbia or any of the other communities before you can talk? difficult. We've actually gone back and expanded the map or changed the map after the amendment has been approved.
Absolutely.
And how does that work? And is there any wording that should be in the guidelines? Maybe it did.
Right.
Maybe it actually came to draft that addresses the process by which you would consider and guidelines for adding or adjusting.
Right. Yeah, in the presentation I made a week ago, I had a little bit more time and I talked about that. My early admonition to them relative to these guidelines is that they not be placed in an ordinance, but rather they be a standalone amendment that are linked to from the ordinance. And by virtue of that, then it becomes a far less cumbersome process because, as these austere gentlemen and ladies, you know, first, second, third readings, a lot of, it can be a little bit cumbersome to go through that whole process to change an ordinance. When you're just making an amendment, it's a far simpler process. And so that's how we did it in Columbia, and that's how I believe Gary is setting it up here. So it'll be a lot more flexible document.
You still went through a public process.
Absolutely, of course. You have
a public hearing.
Right.
To do it.
But it's not as drawn out.
And as you need to answer this question, given this current district, which is now has been known for a number of years, I suppose, as the Central Business District, have we looked at the zoning adjacent to it and where there may be some commercial or limited professional kind of adjacent to this immediate area where we may want to go? I have, like, that may be a potential for another district or something. I'm sorry that I'm not as educated about this as I should be. It just seems to me we've had some other conversations with City Council about potential uses for businesses that don't seem that far away from the Central Business District.
For instance, this line comes down Barnwell. If you went up to Hampton, for instance, there are some businesses on Hampton and York, that wouldn't be covered, I think, right now by this district, but they're fairly close. And is that what you're talking about?
Well, I guess my point is, say there's one section adjacent to the current Central Business District that fairly dense amount of either limited professional and commercial zoning that's adjacent to the Central Business District, would we not want to also potentially including that in the district now if we think that's where the commercial zone is growing? I mean, if we see Central Business District growing, it's just a question to put out there. Because you all are saying this is the district, this is what it's always been, but we also know there are businesses adjacent to it. And maybe if there's some density to that and it's adjacent to what you've already mapped out, maybe it's worthy to consider including now as opposed to going back and amending your amendment.
Well, I can tell you that we just went through a comprehensive plan for the whole downtown, old Aiken downtown, which is the whole Aiken, and we went from the other way. We went to make it all residential because I know that those blocks I just mentioned on the new comprehensive plan, it is on the comprehensive plan to go back to residential. I know that because that's, Ed, I believe that's right, is it not?
That's correct. We spent the last 2 years doing that.
I mean, we've been going, so we're going residential on most of the stuff that on the Old Aiken Master Plan.
There's GB going down Richland Avenue, and that's about...
I don't think Sissy at all is saying she wants more commercial. She's merely saying if there's another pocket of commercial close by this district, you said adjacent.
Yeah.
And it may not be adjacent, but it might be a block away. Or, for instance, up on York, the intersection of York and Hampton. You know, there's lots of businesses up there. I don't know what the zoning is exactly. It's certainly not downtown zoning. What is that, GB?
GB.
GB. But
general business.
General business. But if what you're saying, Sis, is that the same standard should be applied maybe to that district because it's close. It's not real close, but, I mean, it's close.
One is professional trickled in between the two areas as well. I mean, if we ultimately think, I think one of the questions that came out maybe the last meeting at the work session or maybe in a conversation with someone is when do you feel like you arrive in downtown, and having that district really be when you feel as if you've arrived.
Well, the biggest thing, this came from an architectural design and try to focus in on a design of our buildings, right? In other words, if we go to another area and we feel like it needs protecting, then we will write another set at that time to cover it. And I think most of what's going to happen is we probably will get into, I think, five of your districts are residential in nature. So you'll go to other areas that say this neighborhood wants to be protected and they want to maintain their design, so we will have a 10-block area that they will get together to do the same type of thing we just did. And that was my point about those two blocks. Those people want to keep residential in nature. They want to protect their architecture, but they don't necessarily want to be commercial in use, and they want to stay residential. But if it's zoned commercial now, I imagine we have to leave it in here because somebody could go in there and say, well, I'm going to put up a commercial building and affect the design characteristics of our downtown. So we have to leave it if it's zoned that.
And don't forget that this day and time, people with the internet, you have a lot of home occupation.
Right.
Trying to answer her question. Most of the commercial uses downtown are contained within the downtown business zone. I mean, there's a little bit going up Lawrence Street, a little bit more, some more going out to Richmond Avenue East and West, but I mean, it's not intense. Yeah, some, but most of it is contained within the downtown business district. Yet it's been enlarged, some taking some of the suburb areas.
But we're getting
probably
like 80 million. I
suspect if you ask a lot of people, you know, when do they feel like they're downtown, you get a lot of different answers.
Yeah, that's very good.
To me, when I cross Barnwell, I guess, into downtown, you see the stores, I feel like that's downtown. But you could have a lot of other answers, too. You could say when after you come by Hampton, maybe.
Well,
come on down Lawrence
Lane. Maybe multiple districts is a very good one, and I think this is a great start. You know, I'm newer to Aiken, so I don't know all the ins and outs of what's considered a simple business district. And I think that if we're getting 80-90% of what we see as businesses that are kind of in that immediate area, I think that's wonderful. We can capture it without going zigzag.
I would agree. Yeah, regrettably, and you know, you planners and in the audience know this even better than we architects, it's rare that you're going to get something that's 100% pure. You know, even in our residential historic neighborhood in Columbia where I live, we have some absolutely awful properties. We even have some commercial properties. And it's just because buildings evolve over time. And any time you take a snapshot in time, you know, of this boundary, it's going to change. And that's germane to your earlier point. We have to make sure we have a process that's fluid so that we can address those as they develop.
Yeah, we have another problem, too. The more we expand this in other neighborhoods, the harder it's going to get to get something done, because we're trying to stay focused on protecting our downtown and get something that works. And that we, right now, there is no protection. So what we're trying to do is get focused on our downtown and try to get something done.
Well, back to Jane's original point, I am more than happy to delete the word commercial. I think the goal statement remains strong even without it. You could even reference it to the overlay, you know, protect the unique architectural characteristics of Aiken's downtown buildings in the overlay area, you know, but I'll do whatever you prefer.
I think we ought to make it clear that it includes residential.
Okay.
If you don't put residential in there, there may be some question.
See,
when you say Aiken's downtown, add some words there to indicate somehow that it's both, I think.
But then we're also going to need those separate guidelines for some residential.
Why
don't you just put Aiken's downtown design district boundary?
Because you can't protect the characteristics of a boundary.
Just leave it.
Buildings of the downtown design district.
You can do that.
Including homes.
It refers to the map.
It refers to
the map into the description. Under South Carolina law, you have it wrong.
when you refer to that dog, it becomes part of the actual written description by reference.
Okay. Just so we all know that, and everybody else knows that even thinks about this subject, that includes everything there. That's what we're saying now. Everything. Well, I don't disagree with that. I just think we just need to make it very clear.
What would happen if we just said protect the unique architectural characteristics of Aiken's downtown buildings, and it's by the map? I mean, the one problem you are going to have is that area I just distinguished. 90% of those are residential, and they're going to say, when we send the letters out to each one of these individuals saying these guidelines are going to be imposed, this is not guidelines. These are, and they're going to say, well, I got a residence here. You're going to tell me what I can do with my building? And we're going to say, yep, because you're in the commercial zone.
I still say, well, I'm sorry. Maybe I'm the only one that thinks. When you say the word building, I think commercial immediately. You say home?
Or downtown.
I think home. Okay. Okay, that's fine. I agree with that definition.
Would that make sense to you, Randy?
Let's just make sure that everybody understands.
Now, that being said, I'm still maybe in favor of moving that line.
Downtown.
Just for your understanding, I did look. I have come up with 350 addresses within that area, and a large number of those are residential.
In terms of use.
That's
I would say at least 40 to 50% of it's residential.
I actually agree with Sam about the wording reference to tying the map to the wording, because in the guidelines there is reference to site design, sculpture, it doesn't directly say landscaping, but it's broader than just building.
So I
think if we kind of convey it, like as you say,
that's no problem. I can make that. I'll change the goal statement to relate to an area as opposed to a building. And by the way, somebody mentioned that in an email. I wanted to elaborate. The reason we want to protect the spaces that the buildings frame is because that's what makes Aiken special. And I also think it gives greater confidence to the private sector, whom you're going to ask to hold their buildings to a certain standard. If they know that the city is holding themselves to the same standard, whenever the city puts new sculpture, and when the city does a new park, when the city does new streetscaping, then the private sector knows they're going to adhere to the same standards that we are. And I just think that's common courtesy.
Yes, sir.
Right. Just yep. Add at the end and environment.
And that's where Alex comes from.
Like that.
And environment.
Okay.
The downtown overlay district. What was it called?
Folks, we don't need to wordsmith this all tonight. We're just trying to get moving forward. We got the planning commission's going to look at it for many, many weeks. They can look at it page by page. We really need to get beyond this.
Right.
And council, if there's any other direction. So, we're trying to make this simple and easy so we get it moving forward. So.
We've already deviated considerably from in the first sentence.
So.
Well, can we just kind of go over some of our questions?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Go ahead.
My biggest concern, and this is just a question, is that the window issue. Mm-hmm. This is just a question. Regions Bank, we've replaced our windows with vinyl clad insulated windows that you can't tell the difference. They were designed architecturally the same.
Sure.
If you read this, if they're real tough on it, they could have. I mean, this is a question. If you're real tough on how it's read, and I got five or six instances that says use the original wood, use, like they do on the historical, which means you can't put vinyl clad windows in historical. I think we need to be somewhat flexible in that, because It's the better window. And I guess what I'm saying is, as long as it's architecturally the same, or we're not changing the look of it, I would think that we'd want to be flexible with that, because of the fact most of the newer windows that they're coming out with, they can. I mean,
and I thought I communicated that. Obviously, I'm going to set the bar high and tell you all your options, but I'm going to start with the best. And the best would truly be to maintain the existing. And then I say, but replacing a wood window with a wood window is most appropriate. However, other materials may be considered if the operation, dimension, profile, and finish are similar. Absolutely. We allow vinyl, metal-clad windows all the time in Columbia.
All right, I just wanted to make sure we're...
As long as the profile looks the same. It's just what we don't want. Ooh, I could show you a great photograph right now. is those panes of glass, and then they slap a plastic mullion on the inside, and it's just flat, and it looks so dissimilar to what was there originally. That's what we're not after. But what you just described, Pat, absolutely, that'll pass every day of the week.
If you get the tenure of this, it is that you would rather use the wood, and when you say things, if molded plastic, vinyl, or aluminum replacement must be used. In other words, if you put it on the guy that's coming and says, why do you want to use this, and if you can, then no, go back to the wood. What I'm telling you is that's just my personal opinion. I think our owners out here, as long as it looks the same and as long as it's architecturally the same, I don't think this needs to be held the same standards as a historical. And
I don't think it is.
Is that,
we all agree.
Okay, as long as that's what... I'm sorry.
I do think it would be helpful, though, if, for one thing, we don't need to get into this tonight either. They're all kind of vinyl-clad windows. I mean, we know that. That's like he said, there's those awful ones, and then there's those that look really nice. However, I sure wish we could get a copy of that National Trust, whatever it is, that guidelines for repairing windows.
Right.
Sometimes I don't think anybody ever looks at those, because those are really pretty neat.
They are.
To explain how to address an old window and what you do with it that is not impossible, you know, because so many times, oh, we can't fix those. Well, I've heard that.
Jane, I even wrote down Pella, Anderson, or of equal quality, because I agree with that. I would not want to put a cheap, and I think they ought to have the ability to say what type it is. I don't disagree with that. All I'm saying is, I just wanted to say, is that the tenor? And I didn't think it was, but if you read it, obviously you would rather have the wood. And I think there's a... I'm not saying that. I mean, if you read this, obviously you would rather have the wood. But what I'm saying is the people who are looking to redo their buildings, when you got, you know, I mean, our building was, I mean, the wind was blowing through it. You wouldn't believe it. Now that they did the windows that are much better, it's an energy efficient. So they're going to be wanting to do that as long as it doesn't architecturally change the look of the building.
It also depends on the building. I mean, for example, on our home, if the windows were replaced, it wouldn't even look like the same place.
I agree.
And what we all we did was put plain 1/1 storm windows that still reveal the muttons of the other, and it serves the same purpose as far as the wind situation.
Pat, I can assure you this. If you allow me to train your board and your staff liaison, if they come in with a photograph of their existing windows and they come in with a photograph of what's new and proposed and new material and they look the same, I'm going to say approved.
Okay. Good.
The only other question I have, Mr. Mayor, was on page 20. Buildings in the downtown district should be approximately 2 stories tall. And this has nothing to do with the 4-story buildings being built downtown, I promise you. But it says should be, and I know that 3 buildings that are being planned right now are all looking at 3-story buildings.
The goal here was talking about a minimum height. If you look at the language, we want to make sure the buildings are at least 2 stories tall.
I got you.
And then I show some examples of those that are taller because of the use or the monumentality of them. It's just what we don't want are 1-story buildings. That's the goal.
Or on the Rottweiler drawing at the bottom also shows you don't want a building that's...
Well, you can't go by zoning any higher than 50 feet anyway. That's in the zoning. But I just wanted to get a clarification on this, because if you read it, it would say, buildings in the downtown, it should be approximately 2 stories tall in keeping with the majority of existing buildings. Mm-hmm. That's a little, you know, but there's nothing here that says if somebody, and it fits the overall design, and there's other, and it fits the design that a 3-story building could be put in if it fits the design of the downtown.
Yeah, maybe I need to be more specific.
Talking the minimum height should typically be.
We have two buildings, two stories, and one collapses in the middle. We don't want somebody to put a single story back.
Right.
I understand.
Even if they do, if money doesn't.
There's a picture of what you're talking about, Sam, on page 20, which we were just talking about. That top picture.
It's not there anymore.
It isn't mine.
I know, but yeah, I took it out after the last one.
Oh, okay. Well, let's pretend we don't know. I don't know where that is anyway. I can't think of it right now.
Yes, you do.
Anyway, my question,
buy brownies in that building.
My question I have on that, suppose that owner wanted to, let's say, take that building down and build another one like it, then we'd say no.
Or we'd say have an extra high parapet to make it appear to look like a two-story building, like the McDonald's in the Vista.
A false front.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
So we aren't saying you can't have a one-story building, but what we're advocating in the language in the drawing, and I just found the language I was looking for, Pat, is at least make it look like it's two stories. Yeah, at the second guideline bullet I say, the most fundamental guidance for buildings in the downtown area is that the minimum height should be typically two stories, even if the building contains only one functional story. Low-profile buildings will not yield the density and character desired for the downtown area and should therefore be discouraged. Mm-hmm. So that's how I got it.
It doesn't preclude three stories at
all. No, not at all.
Well, but you also say in the first paragraph,
right,
the overwhelming majority of the buildings are two stories in height. While there are exceptions, those that are typically taller than two stories have a compelling use which dictates the additional
Correct.
Height.
Exactly.
In cases where the height is less than two stories. Okay, and then in the drawing at the bottom, mm-hmm. you show a building that's extraordinarily tall.
Correct.
In relationship to what's around it, and you
right.
say, no, that's not what we want
that's
either.
Right.
Should we have a maximum height?
I thought you already did.
We do, 50 feet.
Well, I know, but it's not stated in here, and it
but
would seem to me
be.
That...
The zoning takes precedent over it.
Right.
Well, I know it does, but I'm just trying to...
Well, I think probably the best thing to do is to reference the code, the zoning ordinance that stipulates that height.
I'm coming from this because of one of the designs that I'm looking at now as far as, while there are exceptions, those that are typically taller than two stories have a compelling use which dictates the additional heights, e.g. hotel. As you spoke, you know, you got the retail on the first level and doing condos on the second and third
right.
level. That, to me, as long as it's designed properly, it works.
Absolutely.
That was my only, but I mean, that would work.
I can show you a photograph. Actually, I do have one in here of a five-story Hampton Inn Hotel on Gervais Street in downtown Columbia, and it's only 7 feet taller than a two-story building beside it.
That's because the rims are about this tall.
No.
I stayed there, excuse me.
Yeah, it's a mini hotel.
Okay, I'll
mini
retract.
Bar.
Yes.
Stories have a compelling use, mm-hmm. dictate the additional height, but also, could we? I mean, to me, it seems to also need to be contextual too.
Absolutely.
Considering what's around it, I'm assuming that would be either somewhere embedded in there, or it would be as part of the training.
I think the training would be great because I've got this wonderful slide. I'll pull it up right now as we speak, and you can be my little guinea pigs. But the sketch down at the bottom, let's see, here we go, you know, illustrates kind of some heights that would be appropriate given the adjacent buildings. But let me just show you a good one, downtown Columbia in my training session. I promise we're almost there. Here we go. All right, as pertains to building height, you've got this gap tooth in Columbia, and on the left you have a building that's 3 stories tall, has a terracotta roof, and on the right you have a 2-story. And my question to you, and I bet 90% of you are going to get it right, is what would be an appropriate height for a building that goes in this slot? Go ahead and answer.
Well, it could be at least as tall as
minimum
that second one.
Story, probably.
I mean, the one on the right.
Minimum 2. Possibly 3.
It could be in between those two.
Absolutely. You know, my suggestion, and I wish I had a pointer right now, is
I'd say anything. Oh, you have one? Thank you very much.
He needs to train you on how to use it.
So
You're shooting yourself.
This frame line in this building is a very important horizontal. I have a whole chapter in the design guidelines about horizontal alignment of architectural elements. That's a real important line. Obviously, the top of that building is important. Of particular importance on this building, because it's of such a character-defining nature, is this terracotta roofing material. So I would say a building could be anywhere up to that height, but no higher, because you don't want to really interfere with that. And it could, frankly, come a little lower and even align with that line right there. So basically, you know, anywhere in there would work. And Sissy, I think that's at the heart of what you're saying. It's common sense. You know, when people give me grief about, what do you mean by context? It means you stand where your building is, and you look to the left, and you look to the right. It's not rocket science. It really isn't. And that's a whole part of the training.
Often you have to look on both sides of the block.
Sure.
You know, because the back of the building is also affecting.
Right.
So you have to look on both sides of
the block. Can I put y'all's mind at ease? If anybody has figured this out, it's Aiken. I mean, my gosh, you have a drop-dead gorgeous downtown. I don't really think anybody has this agenda to come and screw it up for you. And if they did, I think y'all are going to not let them. Am I right?
That's right.
Okay.
That's the plan.
Remember, we can't.
That's why we want a plan.
That's why we want these guidelines.
Right.
Okay, but this has been real helpful because I can see how it's so funny. You know, I write these things in my head, and I know exactly what I mean. And then it's really helpful to hear other people's interpretations. They're like, well, maybe I can clarify that. And so I'll go back, Pat, and look at that area and see if I can't make it sound a little bit more accommodating, particularly on the windows. And I'll do the same with the building height.
One other on 60, the painting.
Yes, sir.
Have 41-6. Have all non-paint options been exhausted? And I just had a question.
Sure.
We have a lot of the downtown buildings that are brick that the owners painted over the years, and to me they appear okay. Mm-hmm. I was just wondering if the owner wants to paint and the color is appropriate, should we stop him? That was my only question. I felt like that was saying we don't want you to paint your building. And I remember the F&M Bank was not painted, and they painted it. And you know what I'm saying? I don't know whether if an owner picks a building and it's not been painted, but he wants to paint it and it's an appropriate color, should we let him?
If you read the other questions there, it gets at the heart of what this is about. More times than not, the mistake I see an owner make, and that a good commission is going to help them with, is they want to paint over a maintenance problem.
But that ain't going to work.
And you're exactly right. And so when a person comes to paint, and the only reason they're painting is because their brick's falling off the building, putting a coat of paint on there is not going to change that issue. And so make sure the commission educates that applicant and says, well, why do you want to paint? If it's just because to cover up something or they just don't like brick, I would appeal to them. Once you introduce paint on that masonry, you have introduced a perpetual maintenance issue.
And really, in certain cases, it probably are. In certain cases, it wouldn't.
Appeal to their pocketbook. And yes, the preference would be that the building remain unpainted.
What about on page 43, on the demolition?
Yes, ma'am.
That first paragraph says, how does it work in Columbia? Consequently, the commission will use its authority to delay demolition of historic structures whenever possible to investigate means to save the building. How long do they have a time frame?
It's just the period of the review process.
Okay. But your recommendation is that any demolition would come to that committee?
Any demolition inside the boundaries.
Inside the boundaries.
Absolutely. And again, we aren't saying that you can't demolish a building. We just want to make sure there's at least a consideration of why it's being demolished. Because more often than not, it's not because the building can't be restored, it's just it's an inconvenience. Well, I appreciate that on one level, and yes, we have to take into consideration economic hardship in our review, but if all things are awash financially, I'd say you keep the building. But if you're going to propose demolition, you both have to have an economic demonstration of why you have to do it, and secondly, a plan for the proposed reuse of the property thereafter. Absence of either one of those two things, and it's automatically rejected.
Do we have strong enough laws on the books as far as the 61 demolitions, as far as because the owner allowed the building to be demolished by neglect. And I think we have an example of that in certain. Do we have, Roger, do we have strong enough on the books that if we see a building that it's obviously that every year that we let it sit like it is, that it's going to be demolished by the next owner, what do we do? In other words, if we know one has got water damage and it's causing more and more damage and it's to a structure, I don't have anyone in particular, but if it does happen, how could we stop that?
I'm talking about a more fundamental
at least. You see what I'm saying? I mean, what do we do?
We have code enforcement, and in fact, we're dealing with one of those right now where we have written a letter to the owner saying that they have 30 days to make the necessary repairs to that structure. If they don't do that, then we could take them to court because of the violations against the codes that we have.
But we don't. Do we have anything on the books that says we can go in there and protect it from further damage?
Yes.
And put a lien on the property?
I'm not too sure. I know, let's take the house on Magnolia Street that was falling down.
Mm-hmm.
We eventually took the person to court to get them to fix it.
Yeah, that was through the historic preservation, Roger, because it was in the historic district.
Right.
Citywide, though, you work off of the international property code.
But we could take them to court.
We could take them
to get it fixed.
Do you have a minimum maintenance ordinance?
To answer your question, we could get a court order.
And could we then, if they don't have the wherewithal to fix it, step in, fix it, and put a lien on it just so it doesn't damage the building anymore?
It depends. It depends on where it is and exactly the condition. You got your back question.
Okay.
And remember, too, now, the building code is a minimum level. So it just stabilizes. You know, not to paint it a certain color, that kind of thing. Just to stabilize it so it doesn't further deteriorate.
I understand.
So minimum level.
Okay, thank you.
Richard, does that go for safe?
Excuse me. Go ahead. Mr. Paradise is reminding me, if it's a commercial business, which is a business lease, Roger's telling me about this.
Mm-hmm. That would go for safety situations as well in a building?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm thinking of the Wilcox, 10, 12 years ago when that was about to come down.
That's right.
Because it was so unsafe and it was deteriorating.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Anything else? Yeah, we're getting close to the time we need to go. The paint palette. I was looking at that. We need to look at the paints, I guess, at some point in time and make sure that we like that, we don't like that. It's, what page is that on? I just had
46.
It. 46.
Planning Commission.
And,
good job.
And by the way, I think I explained the night I did it. I just put that one in there. It's the only one I had in my office. If you have a local Sherwin-William dealer, I would, by all means, have them, too.
Okay.
Make sure you give it to your local suppliers.
Yeah. The beautiful colors, I think. Mostly pastels.
The more children lines, do they ever change their historical color palettes too? And the impact of that change and then the resulting implications? Sorry.
No.
They come out with color palettes everywhere.
See, the reason I'm grinning is the whole notion that there are quote-unquote historic colors. Because what most people consider historic, they would never paint their buildings. Let me back up. A truly authentic historic palette, particularly Victorian, which is about the time period these buildings, were very dark, natural tone buildings. People are like, ooh, I don't want that. I want Battery Row in Charleston, which is not historic according to the time period. And I know I'm in deep water right now. I gave away my hand at the presentation. You can ask these guys. I said, I personally, we don't govern paint color in Columbia, and I personally don't want to. But I certainly respect your desire to, and I don't mind you doing it. And so the reason there was a palette in there, Sissy, was if you're going to regulate color, then at least take a proactive, deferential view to the applicant point of view. In other words, don't ask them to say, we want to paint this, and you say yes or no. Rather say, as long as you pick something off of this palette, we'll say yes.
Yes, they do change their colors. The one you're looking at now has been updated from the same Benjamin Moore historic color palette from a few years previously. And I don't know that they changed as much as they added some colors.
Okay, well, thank you. Any other comments, questions?
I'd just like to pay him another compliment. I told him this before. I thought it was a great piece of work, to be honest with you. He really worked.
It sure is.
He did a great job on this thing.
Yeah. And ADDA did a great job in taking the initiative to start this. So we need to give them a lot of credit, too, and we can do that.
Mr. Mayor, I apologize. I know we're brief, but I do have one question for you all, and it pertains on this very page right here. In that opening paragraph, I refer to the Secretary of Interior standards.
What page is that?
That's on that very first page.
The first page.
Page 7. And it is not necessary to either reference or include the Secretary's standards. That's why I posed it in the form of a question. In Columbia, we have it, and all I will say is, occasionally, it's very nice to have sort of umbrella principles that you might have missed in a guideline document. But I want to make sure you know I've put that there in case you would prefer that I take it out.
Do you find that you use it? You said you had it in yours in Columbia.
Ever so occasionally, not very often. My admonition to our council is, our review commission, is to try not to rely on that, but rather to rely on specific sections in this. You know, when they make their motions for approval, disapproval with qualifications or clarifications, it's approved with the exception of the windows according to section 5.2 blank. So it's always referring to this. But ever so often, there's nothing precisely in this. And so we'll appeal to the general principle of one of the points.
And are you glad you've got it in? At that
oh,
point?
Yeah. It covers our you-know-what
well,
quite
maybe
often.
We ought to leave it in then. It works for you.
Okay. Just wanted to ask.
Randy, one stipulation. We've got 300 voters show up complaining about this. We're going to blame that on you, though.
That's so. Fine.
Okay.
Just to clarify. Just tease.
Well, thanks a lot, Randy, and thank everyone here tonight. And we'll just proceed to first reading on the next agenda. And then we'll have some time span, of course. We go to planning and then back to City Council in June, as Roger laid out earlier. Okay?
And as Council realizes, with any ordinance we have that's new like this, 6 months to a year after it's adopted, we always are going to have that opportunity to make changes to it to reflect what's happening out there in the real world.
All right. Okay, we stand adjourned.
I thought I'd like to share, though, before we leave, when we move to Hilton Head, you can paint your house any of the 8 colors of bark on the red pine.
Any of the 8 colors of bark?
Of the red
bark? Bark on the red pine.
On the red pine?
Gray, tan, brown,
oh my goodness.
Black.